You tell him I'm coming, and Jason's coming with me. You hear? Jason's coming with me.
The Liberty Lounge, brought to you every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. Listen to classic country music in the Liberty Lounge to help you end your week on a pleasant note. We'll have sad songs.
I go out walking after midnight.
Happy songs.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
Patriotic songs.
There's a star spangled banner waving somewhere in a distant land so many miles.
Songs of tragedy.
Two little boys and an old family dog. By the banks of a stream sat one day.
Love songs.
Welcome to my world.
And good old honky-tonk music.
I'm a honky-tonk man, and I can't seem to stop.
So join me every Friday night and just let your hair down for a couple of hours here on Liberty Lounge.
Mr. President, members of Congress, you've been making a lot of noise about taking our guns away. But you might want to review history. 1835, Gonzales, Texas Territory. The authorities wanted to confiscate the big gun that protected that colony. You know what the people said? Come and take it. Because they were willing to fight for their freedom and their guns. So are we.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you can. Come and take it.
One shot at a time. Just like Gonzales, we're keeping our guns.
I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag.
You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took the trouble.
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Do you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, get off of my back? Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, join me for The Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on The Shooting Bench, and we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten?
The views expressed in the following broadcast are not necessarily those of or the owners or sponsors thereof. Any and all mention of laws, ordinances, or policies are not to be construed as legal advice or necessarily all-inclusive. The listener bears all responsibility in verifying this information. Be advised that this broadcast may be inflammatory to those with thin skin, limp wrists, and room temperature IQs. Furthermore, the statements expressed by the host may contain information known to the state of California to inspire free thinking and may promote unexpected growth of testicle. Listener discretion is advised.
All right, here we are. Welcome to another edition of The Shooting Bench. It's Monday, the 14th of April. I hope you all had a good weekend. I had an awesome weekend. I can't even begin to tell you
what a great week. Well, I am going to begin to tell you. That's why I'm here, actually, is to tell you what a great weekend I had. Before we start that, I'd like to invite everybody to check out the training schedule at Shots Ranch, shotsranch.com, and see if there's any classes there that suit your budget and your schedule. We've got covered just about every facet of firearms training, from safety stuff, CCW, up to advanced tactical handgun, long-range handgun, precision rifle, just everything you can think of in there. So shotsranch.com. Also check out our Facebook page. We got a group, Facebook group, Shots Ranch, and the other one is the regular page, is Southwest Shooting Authority at Shots Ranch. So I know why y'all are here tonight. You're here to find out what happened at the Bundy Ranch over the weekend. Well, let me. I've got a couple of interviews I'm going to play. We had promised you that I was going to have a constitutional guru here tonight to talk about other unrelated things. Well, I've asked the guru to stay in Guruville until tomorrow or probably Wednesday, and we've got way too much to talk about right now. I hate to do that because you guys would love to hear this guy. I hope you're available when he is on here, but tonight we've just got way too many things to cover. Got a couple of interviews, a couple of different it was a man and his wife, one of the Bundys and his wife. Mr. Bundy, Mel, is going to be more along the, how would you call it, the nuts and bolts and mechanics of what happened over a period of time here and why this has taken place. And his wife, come on, I talked to her today, and she had a wonderful outlook, and from a spiritual point of view, from a woman's point of view, and it's a great deal. You don't have to be of the same faith. You don't even have to believe, but it's still it's nice to hear her take on how and why some of this happened. And I tell you, I'm with her, just so you'll know, 100%. I believe everything that she says in here. So we'll get to that in a little while. Let me tell you what my point of view is. And we had, I heard all this stuff going on up there, and I said, yeah, boy, that's awful. And I hope, I hope that that it's taken care of peacefully. And it kept getting worse, And I was saying, damn, I may have to. I can't afford to go up there. I can't afford the time off work, but I may have to look at maybe going up there. And as I watched this unfold there, and I made a couple of phone calls, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I said, okay, I'm leaving in the morning. Damn everything. This is more important than groceries. It's more important than my job. It's more important. I need to be there. And not a sheep, thank you so much. And I know a lot of you were, and I am very grateful for that, the prayers and the thoughts and the donations to help with the logistics of everything, with fuel and all that. Thank you so much for all that. And I said, all right, I need to go. So I called the guys together, and I said, all right, I know it's short notice, but this is important. They need us. And I said, I'm leaving at 0700 in the morning. Those of you that are going, have your gear and your vehicles out here. Be ready to go. Let's see if that Minuteman image fits you. So the ones that could, of course, I didn't expect anyone to lose a job over it, although I wouldn't have been surprised if some of them did, because they there was some of them that would risk doing that. We do have one guy that works for himself, and he had Crane scheduled to come on a job, and he just left it with these guys and said, do the best you can. I'm not going to be here. And I had things planned and scheduled, not to mention the point that I just really couldn't afford that trip. But we had to go. I went and picked up Jason on the way through, and he's taking care of things, up at Schott's Ranch. And, of course, Jason, without hesitation, is, yeah, I'm in. I'm there. Come and stop by and get me. So, anyway, we all loaded up and took off, not knowing exactly what we were going to get into. And then, on the way up, we hear that a Nevada county commissioner talking to Utah folks says, you better have some, if you Utahns are coming over here, you better have a burial plans, funeral plans already made. This was a county commissioner that said this. Yes, it is documented and is verifiable. It really did happen. The county commissioner said that. Yeah, he needs to be recalled. And Utah, he called the Utahns a bunch of inbred bastards, which I'm sure is a stab at the Mormon faith that a lot of folks in Utah, a lot of folks in every state. Man. And that caused a lot of problems. So when I told that to the guys, and I heard it, I thought, this may get pretty Western by the time we get up there. What did Mother say? Did anyone ever find out why each car had a letter number? No, it didn't. I didn't know why that was. I'm thinking I didn't see the tops of any of the cars. I'm wondering if they had the same numbers on top so that they could see them from the air. But I wasn't able to look down on the tops of any of the cars. I don't know if that was the case or not. It was just a wild hunch that I had here. But there were supposed to be Viper units there, Patriot 2008. I don't know. I can't verify that. I heard there's a lot of things that we can't verify, a lot of things that were surely nothing but crap out there. But anyway, let me go on. We'll get to that in a little bit. I'm trying to keep up with some of the chat while I'm doing here, and it's impossible, so I'm going to have to look away here a little bit. But anyway, we decided to make it up there, and we pulled in, and wow, we come over this hill, and there's cars lined up and stuff going on, all kinds of folks out there, and there's flags flying and hollering and videos and music and just all kinds of stuff. What just an awesome sight. And so we're completely in the dark there, it wasn't nighttime in the dark, we just didn't know where to go or what to do. So we hunted around there a little bit, and I found the guy that I needed to talk to, and they put us in a place over there to set up our camp, and we were completely self-sufficient. We didn't need anything from anybody. We just needed a place to go. Yeah, Mother Earth, we were very much driving blind. We had no idea what we were going to run into, but we were prepared for just about anything. So we found this place to camp and everything, and pretty soon he called this meeting. The guy I wouldn't necessarily call him in charge. He was a coordinator. He was a good guy, good kid. He was a former ranger, and he was very, very professional, and I think he handled his job very well. And so we went up to this little meeting over there, and here's this little dork from California, and he's all dressed up, looked like Sad Sack. For those of you that's been around for a while, you remember a cartoon called Sad Sack. That's what this guy looked like, Private Joe Snuffy. And he dressed up in his woodland camos, and his called himself a colonel. He was supposedly, oh yeah, and by the way, the eagles that he had on his collar were polished a bright silver to a mirror finish. And called himself a colonel and said he was recently been appointed as the California state commander. He said he had 83 units under his command. Okay. This guy couldn't pour piss out of a boot if the instructions was written on the bottom. I mean, he was quite a piece of work. And so he said his staff driver came and dropped him off. And so here is a militia of one. Here is a colonel, the supposed state commander, with no support, no security, no help, no nothing, nobody to run fetch his coffee or get his slippers or anything. And this guy was saying, anyway, it turned out that he was precisely what, yeah, Roger, and welcome, by the way. Roger, I haven't seen you for a while. Yeah, he was precisely what the news media expects to find. He was precisely what the American people expect to see. He was a total disgrace, absolutely disappointing, disgusting, I guess would be better. So he caused some troubles later on. He tried to make himself the self-appointed commander, you know. He called it, I'll tell you what he did. He called himself battlefield commander. And I said, hey, Spud, there ain't no battle here yet. I mean, there may be fixing to be, but you don't come in here thinking that you're going to be a battlefield commander. You got to start a battle to make that happen. And I don't think we want to do that if we can avoid it. And so anyway, he caused a little trouble the next morning, and we finally got rid of him and got him out of there. Long story how all that happened, but anyway, for the most part, I'll have to say, you know, beating our own chest a little bit. I think that our unit and a couple of others there are very squared away and well trained, professional, disciplined. I think that it probably, I have no doubt that it had an outcome on, I mean, an effect on the outcome there. But there was also some, like this sad sack feller, there was also some that were nothing but cowboys, and not cowboys, but idiot cowboys. You know, grandstanders, Rambo, keyboard warriors, high-speed, low-drag ninja guys, you know. And so they... Yarrow 1, if you look down in the lower left-hand corner of the chat room there, you see a little speaker, little bitty speaker right under the text box there. Click on that, and you can kill that annoying little chat there. I mean, that annoying little click in the chat. And anyway, so the militia that was there, I think for the most part they made a pretty good showing. I don't think that... there was a anybody that misrepresented the militia that talked on the air, I hope. As far as the protesters, good Lord. I mean, every manner of individual thing. Some very, very squared away and truly their heart was in the right place. Well-armed and everything else. But then there was some that pull up there and say, where do you eat? Excuse me? Where do you eat what you brought? And some of them were there strictly for the, and there's nothing wrong with that, I guess, but they should have known what they were getting into. They're strictly for the flag waving, and they're trying to get on camera, get their 10 seconds of fame. And it was kind of a cluster formation there for quite a while. And so the next morning, well, that night, members of my unit were, Tom, I'll thanks for reminding me. I'll try to get to that in a second. And welcome. I haven't seen you for quite a while either. A couple of guys in my group provided security at the Bundy house that night, Friday night. And then the next morning, sometime around noon or a little before, we had four people of our group that went and provided personal security for Mr. Bundy while he was on his way to the stage to make the announcement and stuff. What you need, son?
Keys, toolbox.
For my toolbox?
Yes.
I
need the
lug wrench. Oh. There's one in your toolbox, isn't there? Well, hold on a minute. I got to find some keys here.
I can find it. I just need the keys.
Okay. That's the wrong ones, I think. No, it ain't. There it is. All right. Okay. All right. Let me get back to that. Sorry about that. So was there a chain of command ever established? Probably not as well as there should have been, and that's one of the things that we need to address. But once we got rid of Colonel Cluster Formation there, we found that at least in this particular situation that we went pretty well each doing our own, taking care of our own units. We did, there was a lot of mutual agreeing, and we didn't have any power struggles there except for the little dude from California. Once he was gone, then it all ran pretty smoothly. There was one guy there, and it was a guy I was talking about a while ago, that was the former Ranger and all that. He took care of things pretty well. He was not in command. He was not trying to take charge of anything, but he coordinated things very well. And we had some meetings there, and ultimately, but by Saturday, they had they didn't put me in charge of the militias, but they did call me up there when we had meetings, organization meetings, and all this stuff. It was a and I don't know how in the world that they managed to get me into that, or where the thought was to have me do that. But anyway, it did. So I did the best I could with what I had. So the actually, my son, if you guys watched Megyn Kelly tonight, you would have seen my son up there on Fox News there for a little while. Anyway, after the next day, there was a lot of misinformation, a lot of just absolute crap that come out there. And that was the single biggest problem that I saw, is communications. Not only between the boots on the ground there, they classified the militia as, not in a legal sense of the word, but as organized and disorganized. The organized militia was people like us, Praetorian Guard, the Arizona State Militia. You know, we were what they considered the organized militia because we had a command structure, and we had uniforms and gear and all that stuff. So we were what they called the organized. The disorganized, the unorganized, disorganized is probably a better word for it. The unorganized are the ones that, maybe one person showed up, no uniforms, no organization, a bunch of guys there was two guys there showed up, and they didn't want to help with guard duty. They didn't want to do anything. They simply drank beer and stayed up all night and all that. So that was definitely the disorganized militia. So anyway, the next day is when they made the announcement, and good Lord, you should have heard the cheering and the whistling and hollering and going on. It's unbelievable. And that had to have echoed up that canyon. I'm sure that the BLM guys had, little tiny drops of pee run down their leg when they heard this announced. And so that's when things started to deteriorate a little bit. And that's when the misinformation really started. And some people started leaving. We found out that when the announcement was made, and the cattle were coming home, and BLM was being disbanded, not disbanded, but, packed up and leaving. we decided that our job there was done, so we packed up and eased on out of there while everybody was clapping and cheering and heading over to turn the cows out. T-Dog, that's really kind of what happened after, on Saturday after a while. I won't tell you what happened with, Oath Keeper. It's not a bad thing. It was a good thing, but it's probably not relevant to what we're talking about, so I won't waste your time with it. But, we decided to ease on out of there, and they said that cars were backed up, that it was a dead standstill over there, and that SWAT teams and MRAPs and ambulances and everything else were allowed to go past this. And I said, that doesn't sound good. That sounds like these guys may be heading into a little bighorn here. Well, come to find out, as we were pulling out, we saw an ambulance going past us. Said, oh, shoot, we may need to turn around and go back. Of course, we couldn't where we were at because the northbound side of I-15 was absolutely packed by the time we saw those ambulances. Well, come to find out, it was just construction to start with. And, of course, they let the emergency vehicles through. And then, as we found out, a state representative called me on the way home and told me what was going on. He said that, I was wondering why Vegas Metro was out there. So that didn't look good. So how we have Metro and the County Sheriff's Department and BLM and 150 DHS guys in another area, and we're trying to figure out just exactly how this is going to go down. Well, he told me that the sheriff and Metro were there to provide a buffer between the outpost. They were out of their jurisdiction except for the fact that they were there at the request of the sheriff. So I think the sheriff probably has the authority to let them do that, kind of like deputizing somebody, a little different, but I think that's how they managed to do that. But there were several carloads, several vehicles from Vegas Metro out there. So what they found out that they were there provide a buffer between BLM and us. They were kind of basically helping BLM to get packed up and get out of Dodge or out of Bunkerville, so to speak. But Stuart Rhodes is still out there. He's still on the site. Well, he's on the site again, actually. And I don't know how many people are out there with him. But trying to cope. I saw you in there last night, by the way. I didn't know who you are. I still don't know who you are. But, yeah, if my family worked for BLM, I would write them off. They would not be my family anymore. Not now. Not after this. Now, they've done a lot of stuff over the years, but this takes the cake. So, it all sounded very good till we sat back and started thinking about it a little bit. We actually mentioned it to the Bundys before we left that this may be just a ploy, and we was wondering if everybody pulled out, would they come in and raid the house later? Well, that seems to be a bigger concern now than it was then. And so whether that will happen or not, I don't know. I'll tell you, if it does, I think that all hell is going to break loose. There were some very loyal, passionate people there, that some of them not too smart, doing things they probably shouldn't have been doing. And I'll tell you, one of the things that disappointed me greatly of all the people out there is that a great many people lowered themselves to the level of the opposition when the announcement came. And, they were flipping off BLM and calling them names and doing, stupid gestures and stuff at them. That's kind of like the peeing on the rag heads that those guys did. It was childish. It was unprofessional. It was that we lose the moral high ground when we do stupid stuff like that. We will win. We'll do fine. We'll have support until we lose the moral high ground. And when people look at us and say, well, that's a bunch of little pricks acting just like the rest of those guys, then we lose that support. And the militia will forevermore have the support of the people as long as we maintain the moral high ground. Michael Carl, yes, I did hear him say that. Say you can't just simply break the laws and walk away. So yeah, it's not over. It's not over. It's not over by a long shot. It's over for now, and we won, and we pushed them back, and they didn't have a choice at the time. You know, the only thing they could have done is called in the National Guard or the regular army or something, you know, notwithstanding the Posse Comitatus Act, but they had no choice but to pull back at the time. They were grossly outnumbered, grossly outgunned, and so at that point, in my not-so-humble opinion, we should have just said, okay, all right, look, you know, we appreciate you guys seeing this our way, coming to terms with us, and we're glad nobody got hurt, and we're sorry it had to come to this, but, you know, we're gonna back off here, and you guys go ahead and get your crap and get out of here, and that'll be fine. But it didn't happen exactly that way, but that's okay. It was decisions that those were decisions that were made by other people. So if the sound's cutting out, guys, I've checked my stuff here. Everything seems to be fine. So if you're cutting out, do a quick refresh and see if that helps you a little bit. And you also may go to Shoutcast on your smartphones and stuff and be able to hear it. But if it's cutting out, you probably just a quick refresh will help you solve that. So anyway, I was not impressed at all with the people that were doing the flipping off and all that. We're better than that. You know, we don't need that. And the Bundys didn't like it either. You know, they're very, very spiritual, very they're full of integrity, and I think they did a wonderful thing up there. So we're going to take a break here. We'll come back for just a minute, and then we're going to go to a damn near an hour long interview. We may even run over a little bit tonight. Still got a lot of information to talk about. So if you'll give me just a few minutes,
I'll be back.
She's back! Miss Amy is back with an all-new Living Way Out Here on the Survival Circle Network. Join Amy for an uplifting hour of fun on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Survival Circle. All right, we're back, and I don't think I have anything to add to this right now. Although, as things seem to be deteriorating a little bit, we may be forced to go back up there, and I don't know what's going to happen if we do. Excuse me, I'm trying to suck down some trail mix here while I'm trying to do this, and it's not working out well. If we do, I don't know what to expect. Or when we'll be back on the next time. Trying to cope, I think I know who you are now. You said something a while ago in your text that I think I know who you are. So if you don't want everybody else to know, that's okay. All right. Well, let me go find this interview here. And I did this with Mel Bundy last night. The Bundys are, like I said, very, very spiritual people. And they're just old cowboys, you know. They're just, I mean, damn, all they just want to raise their damn cows and do their thing and live out there and not bother anybody. And let's see, I'm trying to find, there it is, okay. And they're pushing them pretty hard. And they're going to do what they're going to do, whether they get any help or support from the rest of us or not. But I'm going to tell you, if things go bad and people start heading back up there, I'm going to tell you right now that it is going to be more important than your job. It's going to be more important than your hobbies. If you have to hawk something, sell something to get the gas to go up there, everybody needs to come up there. The next time, I don't think it's going to be quite as rosy as it was this last time. And I want you to know, it was touch and go a few times last time. It was pretty disturbing a few times, thinking that, you know, we were actually going to get into things that we didn't want to get into. But anyway, I saw the buses coming in today, and I don't know if there's a way to donate to the Bundys. I'm sure there is. If you'll go to their Facebook page, there's probably it's called Bundy Ranch, I believe it is. There might be a way to donate there. And I'll put in a deal also, because we had... the donate button on Just Measures Elderberry is not working. Hasn't for a long, long time. But for our unit, for those of you that are interested, I'll put this back up here. There's people have donated through the radio show, through the shooting bench, to help us to get fuel and food and ammo and everything else. And we are almost certainly going to wind up going back up there. So if we do, anything that anybody can do to help with that, we sure appreciate it. And for those of you that already have, thank you so much. All right, let me, what did I just paste here? That was, did I put that in already? I think I already did that. There it is again anyway. All right, let me get this thing started here, and then I'll be able to participate in the chat room a little bit more effectively here. All right, stand by. Here it comes.
Hello. Hey, this is Mel Bundy. My wife talked to you earlier.
Brother Bundy, this is Cope Reynolds. I was up there with you for a couple of days. I was there for a day and a half, I guess. Got there Friday. And then when everything seemed like it was going your way and everything, we just politely excused ourselves and went back home. But it seems like everything's going okay for the time being. So, but you can count on us. I was with the White Mountain Militia. We were the ones that provided security at your house there Friday night, and then I had some of my guys in the truck with you with your dad.
I'll tell you guys. You know, I was working with Ryan. You know,
yes,
and he was one of the first militia that was there, and I'll tell you, I was kind of appointed to communicate and work, and the way you guys, the way you guys conducted yourself, the discipline, the commitment, I mean, when it come right down to it, I'll tell you what, I love you guys. You guys are my heroes. It was awesome. We knew what we had to do, but to have that assurance that you guys were there made it even stronger, you know.
Well, it was definitely our pleasure. And I tell you, the biggest pleasure I got out of the whole thing was I was invited to have family prayer with you guys in there Friday night, and that was awesome. That was the spirit is with you. You're doing the right thing. You're doing the Lord's work, and I think it was awesome. It was a wonderful experience.
Well, I feel the same way. I talked to so many people, and you know, and they're like, "Oh, what you guys did?" I said, "It's not what we did. It's what like we as a family, but we as a whole, as a people. I mean, there were so many players, and not only the fact that it was so many players, it was the fact that so many players came together that felt inspired to come and help. I mean, we didn't call out for the militia. You know, they were calling us. And I don't know how many phone calls I took. And I told the militia, just like I told individuals, I said, come out and support. And I'll tell you, when my eyes were opened about how serious the militia was, I was in charge of kind of outside operations. And I got talking with Ryan, and I said, I need to know how I can kind of integrate you guys with the protest and stuff, because there's people with a lot of reservations on like folks, you know, guys with guns and stuff, which I don't care. But other people might, and I didn't want to discourage people from coming out. And he goes, oh, let me tell you right now. He goes, let me set one thing straight. He goes, we didn't come here to protest. Yeah. And that opened my eyes. He said, that's what he said. He goes, we didn't come here to protest. He goes, we came here strictly for your family's protection and to, you know, do whatever's necessary. Because, you guys knew what could happen in these type of situations. And I'm just this naive farm boy, you know. So, man, I'll tell you what, it worked out. You're right. There was the spirit of our Heavenly Father there guiding us, and it was just awesome. I mean, the battle's not over, far from over, but I'll tell you what, we were an example to the world and to this country, and it was just, I don't know, I'm still amazed, I'm still in awe.
Well, it was a wonderful experience, and we're all going to be a part of history. And when the history books are written again, this little event's going to be part of it. And there's no question in my mind. And I was just proud to be a small part of it up there. It was fun. I met some wonderful people and got my guys together, had some good training, and it's turned out to be a good deal.
I talked to one. I went into the camp the militia camp. I just want to thank him. And I ran into one guy he was just, I don't know. It was just, I just wanted to thank everybody. And that's what he said. You know, he says, it just, you know, we come out here and he says, actually, I had some training that I postponed, some tactical training that I postponed, to come out here. And he goes, man, I'll tell you what, I got more, he's a special force guy. And he says, this is what I really needed for training. I mean, it was coming down to being the real deal, and it was the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, I got a couple of questions for you, and I don't know if your wife told you or not. I'm recording this, and I was going to put it on my radio show tomorrow night. If there's anything that you've said up to now that you want me to remove, I will. And I just want to get some facts about, you know, how many cows you've got back and how many you think is dead and how many, you know, all these kind of things. If you don't mind sharing that with me.
Yeah, we had a count of 340.
That's what you got back?
Which was more than what the BLM quoted they had.
Does that include calves?
That was including mama cows and bulls and whatnot.
Okay.
So there was a lot of calves there, yeah. So, let me say this. I didn't count. There was some people up on the overpass as they come under. They were counting. So, I mean, you can broadcast that, but I'm not going to say that's how many, but there was a lot of cows. I would say that's pretty close to accurate. But we have a ranch, manager Clancy that has an active count. We were spent so busy I didn't get a chance to talk to him. So that number right there I feel is pretty close, but there was a lot more than what they had quoted on the BLM website. So you know what I'm saying? So anyway,
how many did they take to start with? How many were you missing?
You know, there was, it's hard to keep track of how many like are in certain areas. We have kind of an estimate. We knew where they were gathering, and so we figured, and we were counting their trailers actually, and we were kind of estimating how many cows they could fit in each trailer, and you know, times that by this and that. So we kind of kept track, and I remember there was 5 trailer loads that went out the first roundup, and so we figured right there there was close to about, I don't know, you know, 75, 80 head, but it was hard to keep track of them because they were taking route in and out of that country that we weren't allowed to go out there and to monitor what was going on. So they were taking roads where we didn't even know that they were taking cattle out of certain areas. So we lost track. We had no idea. And with all the confusion of trying to figure out where they were gathering and where they were taking the cattle, what we decided to do was to get an airplane and go fly the range. And I was in that airplane, and I had cameramen with me, and we flew that range, and we actually flew right over that damn compound. And so we got a count. We figured there was 180 head in the compound in Tocqueville Wash at that time. And that was Wednesday. But they were still gathering down at the lake on the lower end of our range. And so they had gathered a lot of head down there. I mean, a lot of cows. And so they had moved them up and put them in the compound. So I think that count was pretty accurate. I mean, there, somebody said 400, but we've got, somebody was up on the bridge and said 340 head.
Okay. Now there's reports going around that you had that 900 missing. Is that, do you think that's anywhere as close, or is that just internet hype?
No, I think somebody threw that out because when we flew that, like I said, you could tell where they had gathered and you could tell where they hadn't been. The ranch all the way down to the lake, they hadn't gathered. There was cattle all the way down the river. The mountain was pretty much cleaned off. There was 14 head up there that they had missed at a corral. They came into water, and then but the lake itself, around that lake, they were pretty much cleaned up. In fact, when we were flying, they were still gathering at that time, and there was one cow in their corral, and they were pushing about 7-8 head towards the corral with helicopters. And so they had already cleaned that area up. But we didn't think they had that many head at Tocqueville. We were trying to figure out, well, were they taking them somewhere else? We thought they were taking them right from the lake and then going into California, because you could take that lake road leaving, Overton Beach and head into Henderson, Nevada. And that Lake Mead Road that they were on turns into 215.
Mm-hmm.
215 will take you over to I-15 and you're right into California.
Yeah.
So we didn't know. But what they were doing is they were bringing everything back to the compound. So there was a lot more cattle than we thought, in the compound than we thought that was going to actually be there.
How many acres did it take to support one head where you're at in that kind of ground?
It takes quite a few, you know, on good years, it takes a few acres, but you know, you get bad years. And so it might take 3, 4, 5, you know, I mean, depends on the year, but you don't want to, that's why you don't want to overpopulate things. Mm-hmm. And so that you can, so you don't overgraze and whatnot. So, but there's 600,000 acres out there. We run, well, what they counted just over 500 heads. You can do the math. There's a lot of ground there to actually run more cattle, even on a bad year. But that's, see, my dad, he's the last one there, and there used to be a lot more ranchers there that run cattle, so there's actually a lot more cattle there. And then they used to, on top of the cattle, They used to run about 6,000 head of sheep. Wow. 6,000 head of sheep through there. Not all year. They would just trail them through. But the thing that my dad's always tried to stress to people is the less that you can't overgraze an area, but you can't undergraze an area as well, because the you're going to have negative effects either way. And people don't understand that if you undergraze, what happens is that browse that they eat, that plant, if it's not trimmed off every year, what happens is it continues to grow, and especially on good years, it'll grow, and then it becomes this big plant, okay? And then if you start getting some bad years, what happens is that plant is so big that the root system can't sustain life, and that plant will die. And needs more water than what's available.
Huh?
Yeah, and so the plant will become dormant and eventually die. So by using the new growth that it grows every year, you're just trimming that back. It's like a hedge, you know. You're trimming that back. And the cattle, you maintain the numbers, and they move on, and they trim and just kind of pick and trim the graze. And so the next year, you know, rolls around next spring, it grows this fresh growth. And the turtles get, that's how they get their use out of it. I mean, if you take a handful of woody old brush, if you will, and you look at it, and then you just got a handful of sticks, basically, and then you come over to an area where a cow has grazed off that bush, and this year you've got runners on these plants. They're anywhere from 6 to 8 inches long, and it's fresh, green, tender growth, full of protein. I mean, if you were a cow or a turtle, which one would you want to eat?
Environmentalists just don't get that, do they?
No, but they're the smart ones. They're the biologists.
That's right. You know, they got degrees.
They're degrees, but this dumb old rancher, Cliven Bundy, hell, he don't know what he's talking about, you know? So actually, you see areas that are in worse shape where there's less usage, you know? And I'm not saying in some areas there hasn't been overgrazing, but, you know, I'll tell you what. I've been in areas that have been overgrazed, and you know what they've been overgrazed by?
Turtles.
Wild horses.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You can't touch them either, can you?
Yeah, the BLM fails to manage their own herds, and they overpopulate, and they just decimate an area. They will decimate a range really fast. And cattlemen know that they can't overgraze an area because they got to be back there that next year. That's how they make their living. You know, they can't ruin what they've got to come back on next year, because, I mean, you know, that's the whole idea. But these BLM, you go back and you look at the contracts that the BLM has with, say, these ranchers. In all areas, really, I can't say certain, but all areas, they have a herd number that they agreed upon, right? Well, they let them grow, and finally the rancher has enough. He's like, we can't sustain our herds with the number of horses. We can't sustain our cattle herds with the number of horses that are out here. We're overgrazing this land. So the rancher's the one that's concerned about it. Well, the BLM, you know what they say? Well, we're going to cut your herd by 40% to make room for horses.
Well,
I mean, do we eat horses in America? No,
they
we
have
don't
to start,
eat
I guess.
Horses at all. I know they're red meat. I don't have a problem with it, but I mean, the thing of it is, you know, that would make a lot of these bleeding heart liberals just really cry.
Absolutely.
But we don't eat horses. We eat cattle, you know, and it's like, I don't know. It's just so messed up. It's so easy to figure out, but it's so messed up at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's what people have got to start looking into. They, you know, Americans got to pull their heads out, educate themselves, and get over these endangered species that aren't really endangered. And, oh, I have the beautiful wild horse. Well, yeah, they're beautiful, but You know, do you want to eat in the future? And if you do, well, you're going to be, we're going to get hungry one day, and you're going to start having to eat a wild horse.
Yeah. I was joking a while ago about the turtles, but what do they eat anyway, those tortoises?
They eat the same thing.
They graze and everything just like the cows do.
Yeah, I mean, of course, they can't, they can only reach up so high, but the cattle there again, the new growth on the plant is at the top, okay? And so a cow will also keep this browse trimmed down, not to the ground, but low enough that these turtles get use of the new growth on this browse. And there's also there's also grasses that the cow can't even eat that grow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it grows up there like, I mean, really short, but the turtle gets a lot of use. So the cow's not interested in that because it can't get it.
And, so there's really not a damn problem at all with the cows and the tortoises existing together there.
No, in fact, you know, the history has it where the usage was heavier, much heavier than it is now. From cattle and sheep, there were more turtles than there are now. Because, you know, so where there's cattle and sheep and feed, okay, cattle and sheep equals feed, then there's going to be more turtles. And, but the turtle was just something they used. It was just like, hey, you got this little innocent animal or the reptile that is cute and innocent, and let's use it against them, you know, and they did for a while. But I'll tell you, and I hope this is going to be broadcasted. The rancher, the cow, don't kill turtles, okay? I'll tell you who kills turtles. It's the federal government. The same bureaucracies that hypocritically proclaim to be in their behalf.
Yeah.
And this is, I'll tell you how, Vegas. You know, they needed to expand back in the 90s. They needed to expand. They were growing. And so the BLM, okay, claiming to own our state lands, they sold property to the city of Las Vegas, North Las Vegas and Henderson, and they annexed all that area. Well, they had to go in to do habitat, you know, studies and all this bull crap. It cost everybody a bunch of money, and turtle counts, and they already had the endangered species, turtle on the endangered species where it lived, and so they go in there. And they do their counts and they do their studies, and then they know they have to remove them, right? Because they're going to go in there with bulldozers and heavy equipment and wipe everything out.
Right.
So they go in there and they gather all these turtles up, and they got to go somewhere with them. Well, if it was me, I would have took them to another range, like my dad's range, and I would have turned them loose.
Sure.
And let them have a home. Let them have a home. Turn them loose. Well, they take them to these. They take them to these sanctuaries in Vegas, and they're in the thousands. I mean, I'm sure you could get a count, but I mean, there was a lot of turtles, thousands and thousands of turtles. Well, you know what happens when you have all these animals confined in small spaces and whatnot, disease and whatnot. So now they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with them. They're too stupid to realize, hey, you know, let's just turn them back out somewhere where they're not going to get bulldozed. Well, what they concluded and what they did is they started to euthanize them. They just gassed them. Okay.
That's amazing.
And
that's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, yeah, and yet, Clive and Bundy's the bad guy. You know, he's the bad guy here. You know,
it just amazes me.
It's just, and we're just fed up with the bullshit. We're just fed up with it, and we're not going to take it no more. And you know, it's just a matter of educating America to figure out, you know, to teach them about, you know, the Constitution and about what powers are legit and what powers aren't, and where they are and where they're not. Statehood, and. And we've just got to figure this out and keep teaching people because, you know, otherwise we're just going to allow this federal government to run roughshod right over us.
That's right.
I mean, they think they have us, but they still have us Bundys to deal with, and we're not going to go away.
Well, you got a lot of supporters. You got a lot of people up there that I'm sure they'll be back if something happens there.
Yep.
Have you checked in? I'm sure you have. What's the homesteading laws up there? What does it say exactly? What gives you? There's got to be some legal document or precedent set somewhere that allows you to make the claim that that is your land.
Well, yeah. See, these claims to the we have private property that's private. Then we have water rights and right to use of the to forage uses to graze the cattle out on the to utilize the renewable resource is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And a renewable resource is, you know, you like I said, the cow trims that bush off, say, moves on to the next one, and next year it renews itself. So there was my family came in to this area in the 1800s and before Nevada was even a state, and it was still a territory, and the United States, of course, through the Homestead Act, once you proved up on an area, then you would be, you know, deeded that land. It would be yours. And with that came those water rights and those the rights to the use to the forage, that renewable resource. So then these states became a state. Okay, so they went from being in a territory to an actual state. And those rights, deeded rights, let me say, those deeded rights. Then rolled over, and were taken upon and recognized by the state. Okay? So now they're the same deeded rights in the state of Nevada. So that's how they acquired the rights. Now, my dad, you know, he don't own the land. He's never claimed to own the public land. He don't. It's your land. It's my land, right? I mean, but as far as the uses of the water, he owns that use. So with that, I'm saying you couldn't go up there and tap into the spring that he uses to water his cattle to, say, provide water to your home. And then the grazing rights that he has in that area are per se, you couldn't go turn a bunch of cattle out there and graze land because he has that right. They're documented. They've been established, and so that's how he acquired those rights through homesteading way back, and the state recognizes those as his individual deeded rights.
No. Is there anything written? Does the state recognize it? Is there not a piece of paper, a document anywhere that says that?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's all documented. But then you're talking about the federal government. See, once they took over and you got the BLM, see, they never denied that he had those rights. They never denied they had those rights, but what happened was you got the BLM coming in here and then they started regulating him and he paid grazing rights just like all the other ranchers. But when they created this Endangered Species Act, then they started to regulate them, saying, well, hey, you can only run so many head and you can't run here certain times of the year because that's an impact area. And they just regulate. And, you know, these ranchers pay grazing fees. And what that means is you're paying the BLM, okay, a certain amount of money per cow that you run out on the range. And then that money it is supposed to go into a fund, and then out of that fund, a certain percentage of that is supposed to go for paying, say, your range manager that works for the BLM and administration, and then the rest of it is supposed to go back into improvements. And what I mean by improvements is say, water improvements to water lines that run from springs down to your water troughs that water your cattle, fences, road improvements to keep access into your range. Well, my dad's paying these grazing fees, and then he would apply, you have to apply for a permit to, say, improve a water, or a permit to improve a roadway so you could access certain parts of your range, or a permit to fix a fence. Well, they were denying all these permits. And so he's like, well, you want me to cut my herd because of an endangered species that we're really not sure about, and then here I need to do this and do that to improve the range, which that money was supposed to be allotted for, and you're not giving me these permits. So what the hell am I paying you for? I mean, you know, you guys are managing me out of business.
Mm-hmm.
So finally he says, I'm done with you guys. He goes, and then on top of that, he got educated and started to realize that we are a sovereign state. And he got looking into it. He's like, the federal government, this isn't a territory anymore. This isn't federal ground. This is state land. This is state land. What's the federal government doing, running public land within a state altogether? So he fired the BLM. He says, I'm not paying no more. And he demanded that the county and the state, okay, the Clark County in the state of Nevada, take responsibility and be the land manager. And by this time, they weren't set up to do it. But he kept pushing and pushing and pushing for the state to set up a land management system to manage it. And they wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And so that's been his battle. That's been his battle right there. He knows that the federal government does not have the authority to do what they're doing, but he's demanded that the state take care of it. And so, I don't know, it's just been a long, long run, but he's, I mean, if you look at it, you know, he's right. You can't deny he's right. It's not him saying this. This is the way it was set up by our founding fathers.
Yep.
If you go back, Clive and Bundy just reminding everybody of what took place way back.
What a whole lot of other people ought to be doing. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and he told the other ranchers around him, join me. He goes, I'm right. Look right here, I'm right. And they were just afraid, you know that government intimidation. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid, I can't do that. There's no way. And had they stood with, because I'll tell you what, they didn't stand with him. And they're coming after them, right? I mean, they're going through the same thing now and have been for a while that he went through 20 years ago. And he's not laughing at him, but he's still saying, you guys have got to do this now or it's going to come to what it's come to here, you know? And,
damn shame everybody didn't get all together at the same time there, the whole bunch out there bring the BLM to their knees and to start with.
Yeah, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? If everyone says, all right, he's right, I'm not paying him and demand that their state take responsibility, you know what would have happened? The BLM would have shrunk like a mushroom in the sun and the state would have been forced to take up their responsibilities. You know,
yeah.
and it would have been done. Not saying that you're not going to have some crazy environmentalists infiltrating your state eventually, but you know, pushing new crazy legislation dealing with endangered species, you know, whatnot. You would have had a fight either way, but at least it would have been in the correct sovereign, you know, areas. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
right.
It still would have been a state issue.
Right,
not a federal issue.
Well, I think it was aptly demonstrated this weekend what can be done. I was I was a little disappointed in a few of the people out there that once everything started going, they started flipping them off and everything, you know, kind of lowering themselves to their level. I think we could have have done better than that in a few areas.
Well,
and overall, it went real well.
Yes, and I'll tell you, you know, as our family, you know, we had so much going on and so many people coming in. I'll tell you, one thing my dad said to the first groups that were coming in, he said, you know, I want you guys to remember we are a law-abiding people, and we are a respectful people, and I want you to conduct yourself in that manner. But there were so many people coming in that it was hard to, you can't control everybody. You're going to have the crazies and whatnot. And they're mad at the government for whatever reason. But we knew that, and there was going to be some bad, I don't know, what would you call it? I mean, some bad examples, but I want people to know that they weren't with us. I mean, they were there for their own reasons.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, the people that conducted themselves with respect and dignity and were with us. Them people that made themselves look like idiots didn't have anything to do with our cause. They were their rogue on their own. So, you know, that's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, all together, for the number of people that there were out there, you know, overall, it was a great display of discipline and what's the word I'm looking for of holding back what obviously emotions that everybody had, but I think
self-restraint.
There you go, exactly.
Yeah,
and I think everybody did real good for the most part. I think the militia did well, and it was just a great time to be an American.
It exactly, and I appreciate you recognizing that, because it was, I've had so many phone calls for so many people. And in fact, I talked to a guy that up in Utah, and then his son's live in Colorado, and you know, the son's called the father, and they said, you hear what's going on down there? He's like, yeah. He goes, in fact, I was about to call you. And the son said, I felt this overwhelming, you know, whatever you want to call it, feeling that we got to go down and support this cause, because they felt like it was something that you could get behind, and the way that, you know, our family was conducting themselves and for the cause that they were there to begin with. And the father said, you know what? I've been feeling the exact same thing. In fact, I was about to call you. So with that, they decided they had to come down. And they actually were some of the folks that were underneath that bridge, you know, with the men on horses,
mm-hmm.
that were brave enough to go into, you know, I mean, we didn't know what we were going into. I mean, somewhat, we were facing armed men that were crying out on their megaphone, or whatever it's called, saying they were going to kill us under a court order. They had the authority to kill us if we didn't disperse. But them are the brave type, and it was inspirational. A lot of people came there; they felt inspired, and it was a great thing. It was a great day to be an American, and I think we showed America what we can do if we stand together. We got to make sure we're doing it in the right way, in the right fashion, and represent ourselves respectfully. I mean, and stand for our beliefs. We're not crazies, you know. We just there's got to be a lot of changes made in America, and I think we showed how we can begin that process.
Yep, I think you guys are you're an awesome family, and I want to thank you again for allowing me to come into your home Friday night. It was a great deal, boy. The spirit was thick enough cut with a knife in there that night, and it was apparent to me, immensely that everything is going on, and I think that probably has a lot to do with the outcome of the way things happen too. You could have gone in with the same attitude as those guys flipping everybody off and saying, you know, you're not going to kill us, we'll kill you back, and all that. But you didn't. You went in there with pride and integrity and I think with the spirit behind you, and I think everything was just as it should be, and I think it went real well.
Yep. Well, I appreciate that. I told, you know, things got pretty hairy as our forces approached their forces. You know, we got right up to the fence, and then negotiations. We got word that negotiations were happening, and then that the BLM may, you know, release the cattle and retreat, but they wanted us to stay away from the fence, and so we all agreed that we'll give you know about 10, 15 feet. And there was this one guy that just was just stirring it up, just, you know, profanities, and it just, I knew that he was going to, he may ruin the negotiations. I mean, if one shot's fired, this is over with, you know what I mean?
Yep.
It was a very fragile situation. So I was on a horse and I rode up and I said, guy, I said, if I have to, I'll rope you and I'll drag you to the other end of this wash. You'll shut up and back up. And I was serious.
I have no doubt. I have no doubt whatsoever.
And he looked up and he backed off, and I was like, okay, you know, we got that guy under control. But it was intense, I'll tell you. Wow.
Yes, it was. It was kind of hairy there a few places, but we felt the same way. I was listening to this stuff going on up there in Nevada and thinking what a travesty it was, and I got to thinking about it. Well, it was just Thursday afternoon, and I made a couple of phone calls, and I said, you know what? I told the guys in my group, I said, I know this is short notice, but I'm leaving at 7 o'clock in the morning, and we got to go up there. And eight of my guys just dropped everything, risked their... You know, some of them have businesses and jobs and everything, and they just threw it to the wind and put their gear in the truck and off we went. And,
well, I'll tell you what, you know, you report from, you know, interested groups like you are going to go a long way. You know, I'm not a big fan of all the media outlets because they can spin and whatnot things, but there are some true representatives in the media, and I just tell the story, man. Tell the story and get it out there, and we'll keep educating people and influencing people to like I say, don't be mad. I mean, yeah, we're all angry, but don't act irrationally. I mean, we got to keep our composure. We got to fight this thing smart and, you know, and we've gotta keep the spirit with us, and hey, good always prevails if there's people willing to fight for what's right.
Yes,
know?
Sir. That's
I mean,
exactly right.
It always does. But the reason evil prevails is because we get lazy, or we just like to come home and watch TV, you know. I mean, we get dumbed down, and it's our own fault. I mean, you know. We can blame it on the schools, and yeah, they're not teaching. I went to school. Hell, my history lesson, U.S. history lesson, was watching The Blue and the Gray 10 times. I mean, you know, that was history for us. I didn't know. You know, my dad taught me history, and anyway.
Were you guys all homeschooled?
No, we went to public school. I graduated right there in Mesquite, Virgin Valley High.
Oh, but how many of you boys is there? How many brothers?
There's seven.
Seven brothers.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was a fine example of country, fine example of America in your home. It was just an amazing experience. It's almost worth the drive for me to come back up here just to do that again, bring my wife and do that one more time. That was amazing to me.
Well, I'll tell you what, and I'm extending this welcome for my family for my mom and dad, because I know they would accept, but you could show up anytime and they would bring you in, and hell, they're going to want to feed you and and make you at home. And that's just who we are, you know. We're not the bad guy, you know. We're just ranchers trying to make a living. But man, I mean, somebody's got to put their foot down at some time, and because if not, you know what the government's going to do if you don't fight, and you can see what they can do if you do fight. But we had a lot on our side. We had the support, and more than anything, I don't know if this is a religious broadcast, but I'll tell you what, we did have the spirit of our Heavenly Father there.
No doubt. No doubt about it. That was very apparent to me while I was there. If a matter of fact, if it wasn't, I probably wouldn't have stayed. It was, I think it was a righteous cause, and I didn't have any problem with it. I thought we were doing the right thing.
Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate you supporting, and we'll move forward. I'm sure you'll hear more about us and be there when we need you. Because this isn't over. I mean, this is definitely not over. We're gonna have a big battle in front of us now that they're gone. They're gonna want to come back. And
yeah, they're not going to take that lightly. If everybody thinks they're just going to say, oh, well, they won, go home and drink a beer and watch the football game and not think any more about it, they're crazy or nail. It's not going to work that way.
Yeah, and that's what's unfortunate, because my dad would love nothing more than just to get back to ranching and managing his cows and making a living for his family and producing food for America. But unfortunately, he's still got to fight the force, you know, and it's just, but I'll tell you what, people, this is emboldened people. And if they come back in and try to do any funny stuff again, I mean, we're going to go do it again.
Yep.
You know, we're going to go do it again. And America knows that. This government's got to learn. Don't mess with the people. We're in control. Yeah. You know,
there will be a lot of people join you if it happens again.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, we need to start looking. We can't dumb vote. We can't be dumb voters. We got to really look into who we're voting. You know, we got primaries coming up, and then, of course, you know, the big stuff in a few years, or, well, what, in 16. So there's a lot on the line here. So we just can't go and say, well, I'm going to vote for this person because he's R or D, you know, red or blue. I mean, come on. We got to educate ourselves, background check these guys, what are they for, you know, and vote the right people in and vote the wrong people out. We got the power. People got the power. People have the authority to, but then even if you do vote somebody in that you thought was going to do what your wishes were, and then they get out of line, you got to stand up and fight it. And I feel like that's what we proved can be done with this whole ordeal this weekend. So,
well, Mel, is there anything that you've said here over the last 46 minutes that you don't want put on the air?
Nah, put it all on.
If you're comfortable with that, well, we'll play it in its entirety.
Yeah. Like I said at the first, about the count on the cows, I didn't count them myself, so you know, I got that count from somebody that was up on the bridge, 340. I know there was more. I know there was more than what the BLM had claimed, and that claim, that 277 count, was three, four days prior from the time we went up there. So, I don't know.
So, well, that's close enough. That gives us an idea. There's not even going to be anybody holding you to it. So,
yeah, I think it was accurate or close to it. So go, you know what? Just put it all on. I wouldn't have said it if I didn't feel good about it. So just put it on.
Alrighty. And you didn't have, there was never 900 missing?
No, there was no, they had, the BLM had flown that, previously, and their counts were anywhere. I mean, they had a count of 1,100, and then you heard 8, and this and that. But what my dad always claimed was, I believe he was around 550, and I'm pretty sure that's accurate what's out there, because if they had 340 that we feel like they had, and then when I flew that to make that difference, you know, that difference was there from what I could see from the air. So yeah, I'm gonna say there was, you know, they're out there now again, once again, now that we released them. There's about 500 or so.
Okay.
So yeah.
All right. Well, Mel, it was a pleasure talking to you. It was a pleasure spending some time with your family. It was a pleasure being a part of this making of history here. And if I come up to see you again, I hope it's under different circumstances.
I hope so. Give me your name again.
My name is Cope, C-O-P-E, last name Reynolds. You might you might appreciate this. Being Latter-day Saint, Jacob Hamblin was my great-great-granddad.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I was going to ask you, in fact, I was going to ask you if we went off the record, I guess you could say, if you were LDS, because you present yourself as a LDS subject.
Well, I've had my ups and downs over the years, but my roots go back to the beginning.
I'm with you, man. I'm kind of the black sheep myself, but I still believe.
Yep. Me too. Well, and for good reason.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate talking to you, Cope, and you have a good evening.
You do the same. Thank you, and tell all your wonderful family hello for us. Okay. There was the whole thing there. This family they're just an amazing bunch of people. This family is very much what I was raised with. These are the kind of people that, you know, when I was a kid, that was how everybody that I knew was. We went out and we branded and did all this stuff with the cows and the sheep and all that stuff, and we get done, we had a barbecue, and everybody got together and everybody helped everybody, and it seemed to me like the way things were supposed to be. And you know, lo and behold, that is the way things still are in some places. And the Bundy Ranch in Nevada is one of those places where folks are still folks. Now, before we go to a break, we're going to have a nice long break here, because we skipped two of them. But I want to see if I can lend a little bit of advice here. A lot of you were talking about, you know, the Chinese did that and the solar stuff and Harry Reid. You know, I don't give a damn about any of that. That is irrelevant. It makes zero difference. What matters is property rights, individual rights, states' rights. Who gives a flying damn whether the turtles are getting stepped on and eating cow crap, or Harry Reid's eating cow crap and stepping on turtles, and the Chinese? Stop. It doesn't matter. What matters is that the federal government is running roughshod over us, over the people. I don't care what the Chinese do. What the reason is for this is absolutely 1,000% irrelevant. Let's keep things on track here. Let's worry about what's real and what the serious problems are. The serious problem is that our government is destroying our rights, taking away our land, taking away our kids. I mean, just hell, you could go on and on and on. So the Chinese and the solar farms and the wind farms and everything else is secondary. It is because of the government that this stuff is happening, not because of the Chinese or Harry Reid or anybody else. We need to get a lot of this stuff changed. And we're not going to do it by sitting around complaining about irrelevant crap on the chat room. So with all that being said, get that off my mind, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back. We've got some more of this to talk about.
I just hate stupid people.
Dad stands in the corner with the barrels are straight. I look out the window and over the gate. The big fat rabbits are jumping in the grass. Wait till they hear my old shotgun blast. Shotgun boogie.
Hi, I'm Coke Reynolds, inviting you to join me for the Shooting Bench PM, the evening edition. Shooting Bench PM is your source for all things guns. Guns, hunting, reloading, firearms training, competition, and a host of other firearms-related topics.
Look out, bushy tail, tonight you'll be in the pot. Gun boogie, draws a beat so fine. Look out, big boy, he's loaded all the time.
The Shooting Bench PM does not include news or politics unless it is directly related to your gun rights. Thursday evenings from 9 to 11 p.m. Mountain Time right here on...
I'll be back, little gal, when your pappy runs out of shells.
Dear Uncle Sam, I know you're a busy man, and tonight I write to you.
My name is John Q. Public, and I am a member in good standing of an organization called America, and I have a message for those agencies and agents that work under the auspices of the Department of Justice. You have called me many things in the past, rebel, right-wing extremist, domestic terrorist, to name a few, but that is not important. What I'm about to tell you is... There must be accountability in all things, sooner or later. When you sin, however big or small, you will be held accountable, either in this life or the next. When you invade people's privacy, violate their rights, steal property, break up families, and hurt people, the time is fast approaching that you will be held accountable both in this life and the next. You and I took the same oath, administered by the same people. We both swore to protect the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Some of you actually feel that you honor that oath, but you violate it each time you force a young girl to her bedroom floor in nothing but her underwear and hold her there at gunpoint. Or when you shoot or stomp a family pet to death, or shoot a young boy down in cold blood in the mountains of Idaho, or incinerate over 70 innocent people in a church in Texas. Warriors, indeed. How dare you call me a domestic terrorist? I go to work every day, sometimes at two jobs to make ends meet. I attend church every Sunday that I'm not working. As difficult as it is, I try to make time each day for my kids. I teach them about the Constitution and the Golden Rule. I have extra food and supplies to help myself and others through hard times. I try as hard as I can to obey the ever-increasing number of laws that are forced upon us, and I pay my fair share of taxes. I have a gun to protect myself and my family against those who would do us harm. I shouldn't have to use it to protect us against you. In fact, your organization is not even authorized by the Constitution and shouldn't be here, but since you are here, let's talk about your job description and performance. We have common enemies, you and I, that we should be united in fighting. The Founding Fathers never intended for us to fight each other. We should be as one. The current us-against-them attitude should never have been allowed to rear its ugly head. Division is unhealthy for the country. You will undoubtedly conduct more unconstitutional invasions of homes and businesses, and more innocent people will be injured or killed. A dairy in Pennsylvania, a rabbit grower in Kansas, a gun shop in New Mexico. It may even be me and my family. But let me make one thing abundantly clear. We, the people, have grown weary of living in fear. We're tired of being treated like animals. If you continue to follow the path that you are on, the time may come when you will not find us waiting to be descended upon when we least expect it. We may come to you. We outnumber you 1,000 to 1, and the same people that trained you trained many of us. We, the people, are becoming aware of those numbers. One day, you will launch one of your cowardly sneak attacks on an unsuspecting young family in Idaho, and instead of your brave sniper finding a defenseless, unarmed woman holding a baby in her arms, he may find that the tables have been turned. One day, instead of terrorizing and destroying another American family in retribution for a trivial infraction of an unconstitutional law, instead of shooting down defenseless children or young veterans that are trying only to live the American dream, you may find patriots waiting for you that have been pushed to their limit. One day, you will find that you have awakened a sleeping giant, and we the people will indeed hold you accountable for your evil deeds. Hundreds of men, women, and children have died at your hand because of poor information, no information, or just plain overzealous, out-of-control power freaks on an adrenaline high that have no regard for human life. Agents that think their badge is a license to kill with impunity. The difference between you and us is that we will not harm your family as long as they stay out of the fight. I don't want your family to go through what you have put many of ours through. Yes, they will be sad if you don't come home, but when the grieving is over, they will come to understand that you simply chose the wrong side. You see, this is nothing more than a conflict between good and evil. It's that simple, but this is not how it is supposed to be. This is not the America that the Founding Fathers entrusted us with. I implore each of you, before you go to work tomorrow, to take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and see if you truly like what you see. If you can look at yourself and be proud of what you've done, or what you may be called upon to do, or more importantly, if you feel that you can walk uprightly before God and look Him in the eye and feel justified in what you have done, then we have nothing further to discuss. But some of you are not really jackbooted thugs. Some of you are simply misguided and feel that you really are doing the right thing. To you, I say, please, follow your conscience, do what you know in your heart is right, for we the people will hold you accountable.
It was over in a moment and the folks had gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have went on living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. Big iron, big iron.
Okay, well, we got that one out of the way. We've got another one that is very interesting. I love to hear what Mrs. Bundy had to say about this, and what the from a woman's point of view. And so we're getting the whole enchilada here as far as the what the people feel like that are actually experiencing this, other than I guess from the people that it's happening to. That's happened, not just the not just the militias, not just the protesters and all that. I want to know what the people, how are they feeling? How are they getting by with all the things that are happening? Now, you got to remember where they're at. We were at a tremendous disadvantage up there, terrible disadvantage. And that was, we were on low ground. There was no high ground up there since no shots had been fired. We couldn't just go and take a hill without shots being fired. And so, we couldn't do that. So, we were stuck tactically in a very, very, very bad place. So, it's a good thing that nothing did happen, because it wouldn't have turned out pretty. T-Dog, you're absolutely right. And T-Dog, thank you for being, we turned T-Dog around before he got up there, because it had appeared like it was going to end, and it appears like now that we may have to go back. And T-Dog, next time you better come prepared to stay a while. But I forgot what I was going to say. Something hot on my mind there, and I blew it. So let's hear what Mel's wife has to say from a woman's point of view. This is very interesting to me.
Well, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. We just had a little scare, so you know how that goes.
What happened? Is there anything you can share with us?
Well, we don't know. We can't confirm it yet, so I probably better not say.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
So, you know how the rumor mill goes.
Oh, yeah. Boy, have I seen some dandies here this last 3 or 4 days. Wow.
I know.
Unbelievable.
I know, it's a bit overwhelming.
Crap people come up with just astounds me. We're trying to do all this together. We all seem to should have a common cause, and you get some idiots out there that pull stuff out of the clear blue sky, or maybe more out of the deepest cesspits out there, and try to make you believe that it's true. And then there's even worse, other people that believe them.
Yeah, well, and you know, in our situation, we kind of have to take every little rumor as truth, you know, and that's what's really irritating is because they don't understand, you know, this isn't about 15 minutes of fame. This is a big deal, and it's serious to us as a family, you know, and so when we get these rumors and people that don't have facts to back it up, I mean, it just makes us run around, and it's just wearing us out even more, you know.
Yeah, you're wasting time, and I wish people would back off that and understand the damage that they're doing here. I know they're probably trying to help, but it ain't working.
I know. It's just causing exhaustion, and it's getting to the point where nobody wants to believe anybody. And so if something really were true, I mean, it's like the boy that cried wolf, you know? Like, how long do you believe people before you just give up and just say nobody's credible anymore?
Right.
So, anyways. Okay, well, I just, I just wanted to share an experience that I felt like was powerful enough that every American probably needed to, because it wasn't given to me just for myself, because what good would that do, you know? But when we were up on the mountain, or up on the hill before we went to the gate, you know, people were pretty, I mean, all of us riders, we were pretty terrified, because we knew logically that we were going into the slaughterhouse, if you want to call it that. But our hearts and our spirits and our conviction was so strong that there was no way that we could turn back at that point, you know. So we offered, oh, I don't even know how many prayers along the way in our hearts, and a large one as a group. And we prayed for protection, and that the spirits of our forefathers would be with us to deliver us from the evil that we were about to face. And we got up the road a ways, and we decided, you know, we're about to drop down into this wash, and we need to be on the same page. We need to have an order, and we need, you know, everybody needs to be on the same page where that goes. So we gathered the people around, and my brother-in-law, he offered up a speech that was so commanding and so powerful that, I mean, I felt the earth shake around me. It was so powerful. And when we got back to the ranch later that night, I asked him, I go, Clancy, did you realize what you said was so powerful? And he's like, you know, I don't remember a word that I even said. He's like, I truly believe that those words were given to me by a greater power, and they spoke through me. And so Cliven, you know, he'd asked us to, as a family, he told us all that we needed to go home and we needed to write everything down that we experienced so that we could have that for our posterity and for future, you know, future generations. And so on our ride home, we had to come back and go to work. And on the ride home, all I could think about was how important that speech was that Clancy gave. And for the life of us, we could remember tiny parts of it, but we couldn't remember all of it. And to me, it was so important that everybody know what he said that day. So I got a pen and a piece of paper, and there was no way I could ever do it justice. So I prayed in my heart that I would be able to remember everything that he said so that we could let people know that we weren't going in there blind. So I got the pen and paper, and just as I was inspired to go to the beginning, I felt it was important to remember the way it looked so people could picture this man on this horse commanding his army, if you will. And so I held the paper, but I just didn't even know where to start, and I just prayed for our Father in Heaven to help me. And at that time, my pen was just taken over by something else, and I just began to write. And when I got to the part where I'd written, and these were his words, the voice of Clancy came into my car so strong and so powerful, it was just as though I was standing next to him on the hill that day. And I was able to get every single word, and I confirmed that with Arden and my husband, Mel. And it brought all of us to tears and made us actually shake, because it was 100% word for word what he had said. And I just wanted to share with you what words I was inspired to write. And this is how it goes. As a man of honor, courage, and conviction, Clancy Cox stopped. He gathered the riders around. His horse stood at the head. He was commanding and confident. His horse moved from left to right. His reins held tight. His posture was mighty. The flag of Moroni flapped in the wind above his hat. His face was solid, and his eyes did not lose contact with his riders. These were his words. This is what we're going to do. We're going to stay in a line. You are not to speak to anyone. You are not going to be confrontational. You will provoke no one. We are here with God on our side. Some of you may be atheists. I don't know. But I don't want to offend anyone, but I believe in God, and He will protect us. Once we get to the wash, we're going to fan out. We will form a wall and advance to the gate. We will remain reverent. We will stand our ground, and we will not waver. We will show no fear. We will be victorious, and that will be by God. We will uphold the Constitution for our forefathers, and they will be with us. Let's go. And quote. And that's what, I mean, it gets me choked up even still reading that, because if you knew Clancy, you would know he's a man of very few words. He never speaks, but when he did, it was so powerful. That is what led us in there, was the courage of that man and the faith of our little brother-in-law, Arden. Well, he's my brother-in-law. He's Mel's little brother, and he's a 16-year-old boy, and he had the faith that we were going in there and we would be protected. So with his faith and Clancy's courage, there was no way that we could doubt what we were about to do. And we knew that we were protected throughout that entire experience.
Well, I have little doubt that you guys' faith and everything is, I don't know if you were there or if you would remember me. If you were, there were so many people in there. But Friday night, I was able to be in your living room, in Cliven's living room, I guess it is, and mm-hmm. have family prayer with you guys. And
yes, I remember, yeah.
I'll guarantee you there, the spirit was thick enough in that room to cut with a knife that night. And I told Mel the same thing, that it was unbelievable. And for those that are not in tune with that or don't understand it or don't believe it, you know, they'll never completely grasp what we felt in there. But I have no doubt that is a big part in your victory and your safety also.
Yes. Well, the entire time that these events were transpiring, we knew that we were standing up for something, and we had received numerous experiences and so much inspiration, and we knew that what we were doing was approved by God, or we would have not been there. To know that you're going in and you're about to lose your life is beyond what you can ever comprehend. But to know that you're doing it because you've been, I mean, we felt as though we were being commanded to do these things, and to not do that, I mean, that would be against everything we believed in. So if that meant we were going to go down there and we were going to be slain by the enemy, then that was all right with us, because we knew in our hearts what we were doing was inspired by God, and we needed to do that. And we need to do that for the people, because this Constitution was given to us by God. And He gave it to us out of every country, which shows that we are the promised land, and we should be valuing that sacred Constitution and defending it with everything we have inside our soul.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I, you know, we
we drove up on the scene there Friday, and it was a lot of everybody was a little confused and somber and everything there. I mean, up by where the protesters were, and mm-hmm. when that announcement came out, you know, the people just went absolutely berserk, and that was a good thing. I mean, it woke everybody up.
It was a scary thing.
But it was after that the feeling got a little dark around there, and there's a lot of confusion, a lot of misinformation, and it got kind of we started kind of paying a little more attention to what we were doing, where we were going, and checking things out a little more carefully. And I think that it's probably going to get worse than that here over the coming possibly days.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on up there right now, but it doesn't sound good.
Yeah. Well, you know, the scariest part was, you know, you're going into this and you've got so many people that are there for good. They're there to support, but you can't contain every person. And you can't control people's emotions. And emotions, if not corralled and, you know, sorted through, can get a lot of people into a lot of trouble, because it's hard when you're being loud to discern between the spirit. And that was the one thing that we were worried about, was that some people are going to be so passionate that something could go wrong because somebody wasn't in tune with the spirit the way they were supposed to, you know. So when we got down in there, I actually broke Clancy's commands, and I broke the line, and I rode out into the crowd, and I told people, I said, we need to pray right now. I need every single person here to pray to whatever God they pray to and ask for protection for yourself and everyone around you, because that's all we've got is God on our side right now, and we need to keep it here, and we need to keep that spirit here, because that is the only way that good can come of this day. And I was really surprised, because I went back to my local where I was supposed to be, and I looked around, and there were many that had their heads bowed and they were praying. And that was humbling to me, because it was more than just us that got it. It was a lot of people around that understood that God is there, and He listens to us, and He answers our prayers if our heart is in the right place.
I agree.
And that was extraordinary for me.
Couldn't agree more. Well, let me ask you a couple of questions while we're on this, something I probably should have asked Mel last night and forgot. Have you guys seen any or heard of any drone activity around there?
We have heard of it. I mean, how do we confirm it? We're just a little farmer, you know, and his kid. But we've heard rumors of that, which, you know, We didn't really care whether or not they're listening or watching everything that we've got going on. It didn't really affect us at all, because we were going to do what we felt we needed to do regardless of whatever intelligence they had, because we knew that if we kept the Lord on our side, regardless of what intelligence they had, we would be protected, because God's army is always stronger than evil's army. And so that was the faith that we went into this with.
I think George Washington would definitely agree with you. There's a whole different story behind that too. And did you guys not confirm that there were some DHS people there towards the, what was it, Saturday morning, Friday night sometime?
I'm not sure if that's been confirmed or not. I'm sure I could find out if I asked, and maybe I couldn't. I don't know. there was so many people there, and there, you know, I guess we can never know who was there unless somebody actually confirmed it to us, because you know, there was probably a lot of people there hiding out that nobody ever detected. So I don't know.
What is, what the heck was I going to ask? I was thinking about what you were saying there and had a question pop up. And what's going on right now? What are you seeing? A lot of stuff we're seeing on Facebook and everything is, some of it sounds a little outrageous. And Are they regrouping?
The rumor mill, I think, is always going to circulate, and you know, until it's been confirmed by us or by our intelligence that's helping us, then we don't take anything as being credible. I think a lot of people just want to get us wound up, and we, you know, down there we've been completely unaware of everything that the, I mean, we've been given interviews and everything like that, and we haven't even watched each other's interviews. There's so much to do that we just don't have time for the media, social media and stuff like that. So we've strictly taken everything that we have just by our departments that are helping us, and that's it. We try not to take anything else to heart because people are always going to try to get your goat, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you don't have any intel that they are moving in more equipment and men and around you right now?
We've heard rumors of that, but yeah, like I said, it hasn't been confirmed, but it's, I think that would be a pretty foolish move on their part because they just saw what, you know, was possible by the people. And I know without a doubt that if it came to that again, everybody else would come back, and probably more so after the way word got around, because so many people witnessed the way we conducted ourselves this week, and so many people were inspired and uplifted because of the manner that we conducted ourselves. And I think that really shows leadership in people, and it shows people, you know, peace is the way to go. And these people were peaceful, and these people had the spirit with them. And that's something I don't think that very many can deny. And I think that would just bring even more. So I think it would be a foolish move on their part. But you never know. They got their feelings hurt a bit.
Yeah, they did.
So,
and I guess you saw
it's
what...
It's hard to see your own people rise against you. So it creates anger, and that's what Satan wants. So, I mean, if they did, well, then we just have to fight them with even more kindness and even more courage and even more faith in God.
Did you see what Harry Reid said today?
I didn't.
He said, I'm just paraphrasing, I read it, but he said that... you know, if they think American people are just going to back down the federal government like that, they got another thing coming. He said, this is not over.
Well, Harry Reid is supposed to be a man of faith, so that's a little alarming that he would say something like that, because he should know that, you know, I think the scripture goes, and I'll probably have to paraphrase it, but it's in Kings and Chronicles, and in both it says that though we are few and they may be many with God on our side, we are greater. And that's one thing that government doesn't have, because we've lost that as a country, is God. It's inappropriate to discuss that now, and it's inappropriate to pray because it can offend. And we don't care, because God founded our country, and we came here because we wanted to worship Him. And we are not afraid if people think that we're nuts for relying on the Lord in everything we do. And that's something that we have, that power and that faith that no army can ever defeat.
Well, sister, I don't believe for a minute that Harry Reid is a man of faith, as he may be technically
well, he
a member, but
yeah.
I ain't believing it for a minute.
Hey, he just did that for votes.
Yeah, that's
because
what I
think. If he was a real man of integrity, he would never make the statements that he made, and he would never participate in the actions that he's participated in.
That's right.
And that's how I feel about that.
Yep, I agree 100%. Well, is there anything else? Let's see. I think that was the only thing. I think Mel pretty well covered everything else that I wanted. I'm glad you called and shared this other stuff with us. That'll give me time to get that put together and ready for tonight. So. Is there anything else you can think of you want to share with us?
Nope, I think that's everything. I mean, I know that people need to start reading the Constitution in their families at night and teaching their families of the Constitution the way my father-in-law has done with us for the last, I don't know how many generations you've got in that house, three, I think. So I mean, that's what's important, is we, just because we know it ourselves doesn't mean that we don't need to teach that to our children, because they are the coming generation and they need to uphold everything that we are trying to restore. And that's going to be the biggest battle, more than fighting the government. That's going to be the battle that we have to fight, is reminding our children to uphold that Constitution in the way that our founding fathers asked us to do. And I think that's the most important advice that America can get, is to read and study it and apply that to their lives.
How are you girls holding up overall? All the wives and daughters there.
You know, we've tried to keep our children, kind of protected and shielded from some of the chaos. And the women, it's been tough on us, you know, because we know that our husbands are in immediate danger, and they're on all kinds of lists of whatever, you know, they want people to believe about them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, it's just always the same. It's like, you know, we try not to believe any rumors that we hear when they call and say that they heard they were arrested or shot or killed or whatever. We don't believe any of that. We've just tried to keep our faith and to keep praying for their protection. And there's been many times throughout this that I've had phone calls and I've prayed, and the Lord has comforted me. And I know that without a doubt that our men are being protected throughout all this.
Yeah.
And as wives, the best thing that we can do for our husbands is to support them and to know that what they're doing is right, and to be confident in them, and, you know, keep our faith, because, you know, as a wife, our faith keeps them moving forward, and that's our obligation to them, is to save faith and stay strong so that our men can continue to be strong.
Well, that's I'm good, glad to hear that, and that's, I hope that other wives that are involved in this struggle, in this movement, have the same type of attitude, because it's very difficult to get out there and do everything that you're supposed to do and be effective and be safe and make good decisions when your spouse is not with you and you're worried about, you know, hurting feelings or worse. And
yeah.
So I'm glad to hear that, and I already knew that without asking, because you girls when I was there the other night, just awesome family. I wish I could have just stayed there and visited and spent the night and not even had to worry about all this other stuff going on. I hope we get all this cleared up, and I have every intention of bringing my wife and coming back up there and visiting you someday.
Well, you know, Clive and Bundy, and you're welcome anytime.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, Clive and Bundy welcomes just about anyone into his home, open armed and full of love.
Well,
so you're welcome anytime.
Hopefully, it'll be under different circumstances if I get to come up there again.
So. Yeah, I hope so too, and we'll keep praying for that, and it'll happen without a doubt. I do not doubt for one second that this will be in our favor and in the people's favor.
All right, there you go. That was Brianna Bundy, Mel Bundy's wife, and I thought it was pretty neat that I was able to get the from a woman's point of view, from both of them's point of view, how a man sees it, and how the guy out there doing the well, of course, I can't. That's not true. I shouldn't say that, because Brianna was out there on a horse and going into the stuff right along with the men. So how sexist was that of me? those women are they're tough women. They're pioneer women, and you know, they'll go out and brand calves and fix fence and build fires and gut deer and then they come in and wash their hands and put their dress on, and they're homemakers again. It is a fascinating way of life, and I was so thankful to be a part of it for a little while. So anyway, I saw a lot of new faces in tonight, and I appreciate you all joining me. I hope some of you will come back, and also I've seen some that haven't been around for a while. I saw, who was it I saw in here Roger hadn't been around for quite a bit. Solar Steve. And several new ones. Lots of anonymous in there tonight. And undoubted Micro Carl. Haven't seen you for a long time. Kaylee's mom. Been a while. Fisher Girl. Been a long time since I saw you. So I'm glad y'all came in. Matter of fact, they looked earlier in the show, in the first half hour or so, and there was something like 532 people listening just on one server. We only checked one server, so we had a lot of folks tuned into this tonight. And I want to remind everybody also, ShotsRanch.com. Check it out for all of your firearms, survival, and preparedness needs as far as training goes. And we've got the Pro Shop on its way to coming up here. We are back in the business of doing Glock dry practice kits, and we're still kind of we're getting back into our Glock work and just every little thing that we can possibly come up with here. We're trying to squeeze in as many services and products as we can. The open house is coming up the end of May, or Memorial Day weekend. Got a lot of stuff going on there. Got a lot of games, shooting games, and things like that. So for those of you that are within a reasonable driving distance, I'd say 2,000 miles, then you need to come and join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of folks, a lot of shooters there. And for those of you that have donated to the unit for helping with fuel and food and water and ammo and medical supplies and all that stuff, thank you so much. We are absolutely, almost certainly without a doubt, going to be headed back up. And I'm very concerned about having to go back up there again. But it is something that we will have to do. So hopefully there'll be a great many other ones that will show up, and when we get enough people, hopefully that we can all just stand there and face each other down and say, look, you know, this is not a good day to die. Nobody wants to do this today. So how about we just go our separate ways, pretend this never happened, get on about our lives, and call it quits. And I'm hoping that's the way we can make it work out. But if it don't, oh well. All right. Well, let me get, I'm in here blabbing, and I haven't got my stuff ready to close here. So you guys will be back on with Amy's show in the morning. I think that I'm probably not going to be able to do a show tomorrow night. I want to apologize in advance. We're probably going to have an after-action meeting for the group. And look at our deficiencies and places we could have improved a little bit. So I really don't think we'll make it. I will probably air this show again tomorrow night. Sounds like a good thing to do. So good night, everybody. We'll see you in the morning for Amy's show. She'll be on at 8 o'clock Pacific time for Living Way Out Here. I hope you'll come and join us. She has the only all happy show up here. There's not enough happy stuff for everybody to go around, so she manages to get all that. Susie Girl archives will be posted on Just Measures website. Also, you can go to tsb.podbean.com. That's Tango Sierra Bravo .podbean.com. You can either download the show, you can listen to it there without downloading it, or you can subscribe to iTunes and get the podcast regularly. And I will get that podcast loaded up tonight before I go to bed and have it ready for y'all. I know there's a lot of people wanting to hear it that couldn't come in. My sister's one of them. So anyway, thanks, folks. We'll see you in the morning. Good night.
This has been The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.